WHYY and Billy Penn, this is your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. My name is Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus and Billy Penn. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Happy Friday, Liz.
Oh, happy Friday to you, Justin.
And a happy Dick Allen's birthday to you as well.
Happy Dick Allen's birthday to you. I didn't even know it was today. I feel so special and lucky.
Yeah, Dick Allen's birthday. I'm reminded, of course, of the time he hit a 520-foot home run over the Coca-Cola sign at Connie Mack Stadium. Just reminds me a lot of current Phillies baseball. Today's game having wrapped up just moments before we started recording, the Phillies logging a 6-3 victory over the Houston Astros. Well, not the Houston Astros.
A Houston Astros.
A collection of gentlemen wearing Houston Astros jerseys played the Phillies, who largely looked like a close resemblance to their opening day lineup with some exceptions. We had Schwarber, Turner, Harper, Realmuto, Stott, Bohm, and Castellanos all getting at bats today. I believe they all got three. And I was thinking, as I was keeping score in my scorebook, right around the sixth inning when it exploded and all of the defensive replacements were made and the Astros were replacing hitters, and, you know, you had all these younger guys come into the game, that we were just at that part of spring training where the starters aren't just getting one at bat and then they're out anymore. It's, you know, it's three at bats, getting a little more exposed. And Tom McCarthy asked Trey Turner, "Hey, you guys looked a little more aggressive out there today. You know, was that a choice you guys made?" And he was like, "No, we're just like at that part of spring training where we are, you know, we're going from a walk into a light jog, and then the jog turns light jog turns into a regular jog, and by the end of spring training, assuming you are sprinting." And yeah, things are just moving along, Liz. The passage of time, Phillies are at the point where they are lightly jogging through spring, and that, I know for you personally, is much, much, much more exciting.
Oh yeah, than just, you know, watching a bunch of guys that you might know in a couple of years before they're traded away as part of a giant package, you know, play a game that somewhat resembles baseball. I definitely prefer when everyone is moving from the light jogging portion of the activities to the let's pick it up a little bit. Let's pretend we're running a race of some kind. It might be a like a long one, like a 10K. You don't have to go so fast right away.
Well, it's interesting because there's so many different motivations behind some of these players. I mean, you can lump them into two groups, like the guys who know they have jobs. And in Philly's camp, there's a lot of guys who know they have jobs. There are not a lot of positions up for grabs in training camp. So you're seeing a lot of guys who are, you know, the non-roster invitees, guys who will eventually wind up at minor league camp. And they're kind of playing their hearts out. And one thing I wanted to know, I wanted to ask, get your opinion on this. Right at the end of today's game in the ninth inning, the Phillies were up 6-1, I believe, at this point. There was already one or two outs. Like, the game was, assuming there wasn't a sudden disaster, they pretty much had the game locked up. And also, it's spring training. These are all exhibition games. They don't count. Also, young players from the group we just described might be trying to show something or using this opportunity where, again, the games don't count, to do something a little crazy. And
I didn't watch the game. I feel like there's something coming here.
And so with I apologize. I can't remember if there were one or two outs, but there was more than no outs and a runner on base and a ball was hit, a hard hit ball to center field. And Matt Kroon was out there. He is, of course, from the group of players who does not have an opening day job with the Phillies. And he went into this dive on a ball that, like, you're watching it and you're just like, yeah, him and that ball are not on a path where they are going to intersect. And but he laid out for it and he missed it and it went to the fence. And it looked like, based on the third base coach's reaction, that they were going to go for a inside the Parker, but the guy wound up pulling up at third base, so they didn't, you know, get the run in. They got the ball back in. It's a spring training game, whatever. Ruben Amaro said that he said, "Oh, I guess Kroon, like, he really made a poor judgment diving for that ball." And I'm just thinking, and again, this is just an opinion question for you. I'm just thinking, if you're that guy, if you're Matt Kroon, a guy who's, you know, not a highly touted prospect, a guy who's in camp to just kind of like be in shape to maybe get that quad A for some reason necessary job with the Phillies at some point. Maybe he gets traded. Who knows? But you're in camp as that guy, and a ball comes to you where you're like, well, I don't know, that might be within a body length away from me. Probably it's not, but there's, you know, we're in the ninth inning of a spring training game, and I'm here for this reason. Why not lay out? I mean, which side of that debate do you land on? Ruben Amaro's side, where you're like, that was a poor decision, and he cost himself some
You know
some
what side I'm
points.
On.
Yeah, you want him to lay out?
You know what side I'm on. Like, of course, it's the ninth inning of an exhibition game. His job is to, his goal is to win a job. That's when you take chances like that. It wasn't a wise decision to go for that ball. That is June. That is July. That's September and October. It's that now is great effort. You know, this is how he could have done it. You know, maybe this is why he shouldn't have. You know, that's something that he'll get a handle on, presumably, blah, blah, blah. Like, there are ways to do it instead of being like, what a poor decision from this young man trying to win a job. How dare he try to impress anyone? Ugh, he's such a curmudgeon. Like, I love it and hate it. I really do.
I would love to see the numbers on, and these are, we'll never get these numbers, but balls that were caught by players who in the moment thought, I'm not going to catch that. I would love to see.
Well, there's at least one. Well, it's DeCastellanos from last season when he literally said in the post game, I did not think I was going to catch that. And then a little voice in my head told me to do it. And then I listened to it.
That was to throw.
Like, that's what a serial killer says.
Yeah. And that was with the game on the line with the runner on third and everything. I mean, I would have guessed he wasn't sure. He was not 100% on any of those diving basket catches he made in 2022 all through the postseason as well.
No.
But if we we had access to those numbers, that would just be an interesting piece of data to have, because I would be curious, like, did Matt Kroon think he was going to catch that ball? Did he lay out thinking, if I lay out, maybe I can catch that? Because, I mean, you're right, though. If you're going to go all out like that, this is the time and the place for it. I could also see it like, yeah, but also you got to keep that ball in front of you if this was a real game situation to keep runs from coming in, and he didn't do that. And if the Phillies are trying to put more emphasis on winning games in spring training this year, then that is something they would hold against them. I don't know. It's just there's a lot of moving pieces to spring training, and that was a moment that in which I felt a lot of them were culminating. Ruben Amaro also said something interesting I wanted to mention today during today's broadcast, where he said that he felt the best outcome of a spring training at bat is a line drive out, because you know you hit it squarely and sharply, but then you don't have to run the bases. Your thoughts?
That sounds like a 1993 Phillies.
Sounds like Kruk.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's literally, that's exactly it. So it's like, why are you saying this? Like... Like, I'm just here. Let's take a look.
That sounds like something he heard Kruk say, because he is.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Because Ruben Amaro is a 1993 Philly, if people forget, because they think of him as the GM first. But he is also a member of the 1993 Phillies. And that is also something that lives inside his head. But I also thought, hey, you know what? You're not wrong. You know, the effort was there. The execution was right. We all know that a guy who's struggling, if you look at the numbers and see, yeah, he's struggling, but he's hitting a ton of line drives, you know, eventually the line drives are going to start falling. So he shouldn't necessarily change a whole lot about his approach. So if you're in spring training and you're whacking line drives all over the field, and there just happens to be a guy standing there, then yeah. And then you're saving yourself from extra exertion of any potential injury causing situations where you're running hard. I don't know. I was like, yeah, that honestly, that makes a lot of sense.
Then why are we having spring training games to begin with? Well, why don't we just have the guys opportunity hit to line drives?
You have to have the opportunity to hit line drives, I think. Yeah, you know, you could just stand in the hit them off a tee, sure, but it's obviously different from getting live pitching from another team's pitcher. And if you can square up and you hit the ball, like, you know, yeah. It's like somebody getting asked out on a date and then being like, then their date being like, oh, okay, where do you want to go and what day do you want to go? And then being like, oh, it's actually enough for me that you just wanted to go on a date. Like, I got the validation I needed. Do we really have to
actually go out with you.
You know, that very normal situation.
I like you, but not that much.
And I like you, but I'm also tired. I'm trying to conserve my strength for regular dating season.
See, I feel like this is just the eternal argument about spring training, because, like, everyone knows that spring training matters and helps, but no one can agree why or how. Are they practicing?
Or to what level?
Is it practicing in real game decisions?
Right.
Are they supposed to be exercising? But not too hard because they could get hurt. But if they don't go too hard, how ready will be they be for the beginning of the season? It is all things for all people and nothing for everyone and no one.
That's very true. I think only the players themselves know how they want to approach it. Obviously, some guys take it easy and work their way back in. Obviously, I think that's the approach that a lot of pitchers take. Then you have guys like Bryce Harper who show up and they're like, I want to hit every home run in the world, which you have started to see, I feel, in his at-bats. Harper came out today. He did not hit a home run today. And like I said, the Phillies were noticeably more proactive at the plate and on the bases. I believe they pulled off a double steal today that Harper was involved in. They continue gaining that momentum for the regular season, but watching Harper's hack specifically, boy, he wants to start hitting homers. You can tell there was a pitch he struck out on that you could tell he just wanted to lift this thing out of the stadium. Then in the fifth, he really thought he had one. It wound up shooting off the top of the fence for a double, but I think he was positive he had it, and then he came out of the game after that. But, yeah.
In a month, that'll go out.
Exactly.
In a month down in Florida, that'll go out. Unfortunately, in a month, they'll be in Philadelphia. So
Harper's an interesting spring training case for the reason I guess I just specified, where we kind of, you know, it's been 5 years since he signed here, which is crazy. It still feels like he's got some of that new car smell on him, regardless of how much time he's been here.
Somehow, yeah.
All he's accomplished since he's been here, and it does feel like he's a shiny new toy every time he comes down to spring training. And I know we're going to reach that part where it's just like, yeah, this is Bryce Harper playing on easy mode. This is Bryce Harper playing against other teams, NRIs, who are up there throwing very hittable AAA pitching, and he's just whacking the crap out of it and, you know, putting it over the tiki bar and putting it over the Wawa sign and just dropping it on the highway, and you're just like, boy, get him out of that game and just drop him off at CBP and he can wait for everybody else. Like,
he's ready. He's always ready. He's always, always, always ready. Like, he's not one of those, he's definitely not a Wheeler type who's like, I, you know, want to retire, you know, by this point. I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to give my whole life to this game. Bryce Harper would give his life for the game. I think he would. He loves it. It's everything to him. It was what he was born to do.
Talk about a guy who will lay out in a dive in a spring training
Always.
Game. I don't know. I think he's... I like to think he's matured a lot, and we know he has in that regard, but I always think back to that moment last year where, what was it, like a week removed from coming back from the fastest Tommy John recovery of all time, and he jumped elbow first into a camera well to catch a ball.
Oh God, I remember just the pain, the panic, like, what are you doing? You have to imagine his wife gave him a smack across the head. You know, after that, what are you doing? Already, it's been a while since you've been able to hold our children. If this happens again, you better believe I'm going to get you one of those little hooks, and you're going to have to do all of your work just the same.
Well, after all this Harper talk, I will say the Phillies' big bat of the day today against the Astros belonged to Bryson Stott, who scored or knocked in a run in every at-bat. Again, he got three at-bats, same as the rest of the Phillies regulars who started today. He worked a deep count and smoked a low and inside pitch over the Wawa sign and right. It was wind-assisted, for sure, but also great contact and indicative of what Stott has been saying he's trying to do in spring training, which is be more selective, chase fewer pitchers, you know, be a little more patient at the plate. He's a guy who had the reputation of as a young player who put together some very mature veteran at-bats. I think you started seeing that kind of get chewed away a bit by the end of last season. He had a really bad September last year. But that approach in spring training is kind of the opposite of what Schwarber's been trying to do this spring, which is be more aggressive to avoid two-strike counts, which is where he runs into trouble. He just missed a homer today. Not quite getting all of it, in front of the right field warning track. But as far as Stott goes, you know, he's trying something in spring training, as all players are. And this is after John Middleton recently said in a story by Todd Zielecki, Stott, I think, already is a star. He's a finalist for the Gold Glove. He should be an all-star, in my opinion, this year. He could be winning the Gold Glove. That's what you need. Stott says, again, his goal this year is to hit 300. He says that's the gold standard. And he was on his way to that last year. And while batting average may be devalued in a lot of baseball stat circles, we do still use it as a general barometer for a player's success at the plate.
Yeah.
You know, you do still kind of use it as a summary. It's cliff notes, I guess.
It does mean that you are hitting.
Right.
Like, I think baseball players use it. It's, I mean, I'm sure they look at a lot of other stuff, but like on the most basic level, it's how many balls did you hit today? How many weren't near fielders?
Right.
You know, and it's very basic. And I think that matters a lot to players because they are in it in a way that we aren't. We can sort of pull back and see the game even through, you know, the middle of the 162. The players are just there every day actually doing it. And so, like, them looking further out, for them, it's just like, I did this yesterday. I want to do this tomorrow. Anything further out or back beyond that, I cannot promise you.
And we live in an age where if you want to look into exactly what a guy is doing, like a batting average will tell you how a guy is doing. If you want to learn exactly what he's doing, there are batted ball statistics out there.
Yep.
There are strikeout statistics out there. You know, there are exit velocity and hard hit percentage. These stats are out there. You can find out like, oh, okay, he's hitting the ball, but he's hitting a lot of ground balls and he's getting lucky. Or he's not hitting the ball, but he is hitting a lot of line drives, you know, that kind of thing. You can find that out. So batting average still has its use. Last year, Bryson Stott hit 280. He says he had a bad month and never recovered. That month was, like I said, that was September. He was hitting 296 before the month of September. So he was pretty close. He almost had it. And, you know, Middleton saying, I think he's a star already. Everything he listed as reasons he was a star were things that were like almost there, I noticed. Like, don't get me wrong. I think Bryson Stott is an incredible player, and he kind of is unique on the Phillies in that he came up through their system, and he's still pretty young, whereas most of the Phillies starters are, you know, in their early 30s or entering their early 30s or, you know, just in a different phase of their career. And Stott's a little behind them, but he puts up numbers like one of their big boppers, like some of their big boppers sometimes. So, Liz, is Bryson Stott a star right now or more of a star in the making in your view?
I think he's most of the way there. I mean, I agree that everything is like almost, and he knows it. You know, it's obvious. He's like, I want to hit 300. He's setting marks and goals for himself because he knows he's capable of more. You know, whatever it was at the end of last season, like whether it was he just ran out of gas or got worn down, you know, the more time guys spend it, because that was just his first full, like real full season, wasn't it? Unless it was, hold on. I can't remember.
I mean,
but the more time the guys spend in the majors doing the major league things.
He played 127 games in 2022 as a 24-year-old.
So, oh, yeah, there we go.
This was easily the most he's played in a single season.
Ever.
151, yeah.
Yeah, 151. Man, he played a lot last year. That's great. That makes me happy because that's what the guys are supposed to do. That's what guys want to do. They want to be out there. They want to play every day. They want to be the reliable guy. And I think Stott just wants to, he wants to further lock down his position because he knows the Phillies are willing to spend. And if he's not getting the job done, the Phillies will figure out what to do at third base, at a shortstop, if for some reason he's not the answer.
Second base.
But I think he is the answer, right?
Yeah. And at second base specifically, I mean, that's
second base. Thank you.
They kind of move people around. There was like some question as far as like, you remember Gene Segura came here and then he was going to play third base and Didi Gregorius was here. And there were some questions about where Stott was going to be. And by getting Turner, they were like, oh no, you're going to play second base. And I think that's why a lot of people are excited about Bryson Stott this year, because he's kind of at that point as a player where he's, you know, again, as Middleton was framing it, he was like, oh, I think he will be an all-star. And he was, you know, he almost hit 300 last year, and he was in the running to win a gold glove. Like, he is almost there statistically and exposure wise. To be like, he's not a household name, but he's close. And I think a lot of people are putting the pressure on this year for Stott specifically and thinking this guy is going to break out this year. He's going to hit 300. He's going to deliver in ways that more often. He's going to be more used to the ebb and flow of the Major League Baseball season. And he's going to give you, 15 home runs last year. Maybe gives you a couple more in that department as well. Or maybe he's one of the guys who gets on base more frequently and then gets knocked in by one of the 12 other guys on the Phillies who's there to hit home runs. So, he's got a good opportunity here. I don't think the pressure's on him. He's not like the guy they've built around and is getting completely scrutinized. And his success this spring is going to determine how people feel about the team coming into the regular season. I think he's a very valuable member of the team who, unlike a lot of the other starters, maybe hasn't hit a ceiling yet. I don't think he has. I mean, no. We kind of talked about that with John Stolness in regards to him and Bohm, and I feel like they both probably have another half step to find in Bohm's case. In Stott's case, I think there's even more space between him and his ceiling right now. And I think eventually he is going to be an all-star player at the very least, and that year could be this year.
I hope so. I see a lot that I love in Stott. He's not Chase Utley, but he projects a lot of the same strength on the field. The way, the way he moves, it looks practiced. He's supposed to be there. He looks great. And I love that you think that there's a lot more room for him to grow. I think we saw a lot of flashes last year of what both Bohm and Stott could be. They profile perfectly to fit in this lineup on this team. What they bring is really important, both of them. So it's exciting that there are like young players that still have potential to realize. Like I didn't think we'd be there at this point with this team, like still being excited about younger players, but we are. Like it's 2024. These guys have been around for a while, and it's incredible that they're still young players. But like now they're actually getting to the point where they're established.
Right. It's the difference between guys like Schwarber and Castellanos and Harper and Turner, all of them. You know what you have in those guys. And Stott, you also are pretty confident about what you have, but you're also pretty confident there's stuff you haven't seen yet. And you're right. There's a certain amount of excitement that goes into that as well. You can count me among the people who think Stott's going to have a great year this year and that he's going to capitalize on his success last year. And he's going to look more like a major league all-star than ever in 2024. So that'll be great to see. It was great to see him hit that home run today. His first of the spring. Phillies are hitting home runs down there. They're spreading them out. I don't know. I meant to check if they had like where they were on the team rankings in spring training so far this spring, but last I checked, they do not. Wow. I was way off. They have 16 home runs. That ties them with the Tigers, Cubs, and Orioles in like fourth place, I guess. The Pittsburgh Pirates have the most home runs in spring training with 24. They're the only team that has more than 20.
Evidence that spring training does not matter. It matters to no one. Like it's great. Like I love that the Phillies want to like win more and they want to, do more regular season stuff. But like none of this doesn't make any of this count anymore. They just get practice with their mentality. They get to practice going out there and not. And like, I think really for the first time being a team that knows what it should be and knows where it needs to be, and knows what they have to do. Like they're coming out with full confidence. They're not coming out like, oh, what about dancing on my own? I think they're fully done with it. They're ready to just, they're ready for everything. They're already ready to do it all. And I like the approach that they're taking this year because they're just going to have their heads in the game completely by the time they get to Philly. And once they get there, they're going to have like the extra adrenaline of the crowd being absolutely insane.
Well, speaking of spring training power, I just want to say, since I'm looking at these numbers, the St. Louis Cardinals have 3 home runs for the entire spring thus far, with a team slugging percentage of 320, which is higher than the Miami Marlins team slugging percentage of .311, but the Marlins have 5 home runs in fewer games. So,
oh, man, I'm so excited for the regular season to start. I really want to see what happens to all these teams.
Yeah, speaking of which, you know which team? I want you to guess. I'll give you 2 guesses. What team has the highest collective slugging percentage in spring training? Both leagues right now.
The Giants.
No.
No. 2 guesses. Am I? I was going to ask if I'm anywhere close, but who cares?
In a way, you are close. But in the next couple of years, you won't be close anymore.
Now I'm even further away from it. Let's say the Mets.
No, it is the Oakland Athletics. They are the only team in spring training to have a slugging percentage over .500 right now. They have a team batting average of .294, and they have hit 17 home runs. That batting average is the... Oh, I'm sorry. It went up while I was talking because they're playing a game right now. They now have a .505 slugging percentage and a .296 team batting average.
Wow. Wowzers.
That ties them for the highest team batting average in Major League Baseball this spring training with, you know, the Rockies. And, yeah, they still have the only slugging percentage over .500. Your Oakland Athletics, Liz. Doing it.
Mine and yours, all of our Oakland Athletics. Aren't they just all of our team now, really?
Well, with all this talk about power, let's stop doing that and talk about the opposite, which is, of course, bunting. Hooray! Everyone loves a good conversation about baseball's forgotten little child, bunting.
Is that the opposite of a home run?
I'm going to say yes.
All right.
What would be the op of like turning around and hitting a foul ball 300 feet in the opposite direction? Is that what you're saying?
No, but I guess it's hard to figure out what the, I guess it depends on how you're looking at the opposite or the inverse, because there isn't a play that costs you a run, unfortunately.
I would say that in terms of batted balls in fair play, those two are the opposite. Because with a home run, you're trying to hit it as far as you can. With a bunt, you're trying to hit it as shortly as one would try to hit a baseball on purpose.
Yeah, you're exactly. That's the smallest goal you can have.
There you go. So bunting, Liz, can you believe, bunting just isn't cool anymore. People just don't like it. You know,
shocked
when you think about the fluid swing of a talented home run hitter making that solid contact, the ball traveling 450 feet, people in the stands standing up and cheering. And for some reason, that just thrills people more than a guy turning around like he's getting out of one of those grade school desks, like chairs with the desks attached to them.
Like an awkward
and then,
squat.
Like, moving his hand up. Yeah, like he's trying to break his finger on the pitch and then turning and just being like, let me just give it a little boop here. Let me just bump it down the line. That's going to be fun, right?
It's an awkward spot. You're trying to like very gently pop a soap bubble.
But I'm here to tell you bunting's cool again, Liz. I mean, not to everyone, but
who
I'm saying
says?
Let's make this the starting point, that bunting is cool again. Matt Gelb recently wrote in The Athletic about how Johan Rojas went to bunt school because he is not a power hitter. He has
is that
speed.
What it's called?
This is what we're calling it. It's like when they say, oh, the Phillies pitching lab, and you imagine like tubes and like experiments and guys in white coats, but really it's just, you know, a bullpen. In this case, not an actual academy where they send small, fast players to learn how to, you know, square up on a pitch. No, in this case, they were just talking to him and developing the skill of bunting in Johan Rojas, who is someone who really should know how to bunt well. But like I said, he's not a power hitter. He has speed they can use. And if he learns how to do it, he can start doing it well. He can start picking out spots where it makes sense to do it. He can start trusting his own bunting instincts. In Gelb's article, he writes about how Rob Thompson pointed out a moment where in a game the first baseman was playing back and deep and off the line, and he kind of nodded at Rojas and was like, this is a perfect time to lay the bunt down. Now, there aren't a lot of bunters on the Phillies roster. There's one, at least, but we'll get to him in a minute. Let's just start with, Liz, what is bunting? Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, what is bunting? Well, according to the book, How to Hit and Run the Bases, I own it, a bunting is a long...
He reads it every day.
Yeah. You wonder, why aren't you better at those things? And I would say, what, reading? I'm actually very good at it. Thanks. but yeah, in the book, How to Hit and Run the Bases, bunting is considered a long neglected tactic, even though a bunt, as the book says, a bunt is called for at some time in every game. This is where I will point out this book was published in 1971. So okay. If they are looking at it as a long neglected tactic, I know it kind of like came back at certain points, but we are once again in an era where bunting is not super valued. They stopped teaching pitchers how to bunt and were just like, no, just pitch. And when you have to hit, just stand there. They stopped valuing sacrifice bunts. It was too easy to break a finger when you were bunting. And then pitchers stopped hitting entirely in both leagues. So you just stopped seeing a lot of it. Very few batters took advantage of bunting during the era in which the most dramatic shifts were employed. And I know a lot of people, there were arguments against doing this. But when you're leaving an entire half of the field open, I still think, you'd think somebody would have taken advantage. Some slugger who they were shifting dramatically on, Ryan Howard, could have just used like some of his twilight years to learn how to square up on a bunt and then just start throwing defenses for a loop. And maybe they stop shifting as dramatically. I don't know. I know I've seen Bryce Harper take advantage of that. At least once I've seen him successfully take advantage of that. But now shifting is also off the table. So, you know, that window has closed as well. But when done correctly, bunting is like springing a trap on nine guys, none of whom are aware they've wandered into it. It's about being smarter than the defense. It's an ambush, and it can work for some guys more than others. One of the best bunters with the bases of all time is Mickey Mantle. So if one, if not the best all-around players of all time, bothered to include it in their game, you know, it might be worth getting good at, just to see. Liz, this is a Phillies offense we currently have that I think it still has the reputation as being pretty home run dependent. It's something I don't think they necessarily want to be, but they do have a bunch of guys in the lineup who can give you the power. And, you know, they can run on home runs for a couple of months when all the stars have aligned. Would you like to see more versatility in the Phillies offense?
I don't think it would hurt. I mean, it certainly couldn't. Like, all of these things exist in baseball for a reason, and they can all be employed at times that are advantageous. You know, I think that bunting is important, especially for a guy like Rojas. Like, he could actually, like, that could make a difference. There were a lot of times where we're looking at a situation where the Phillies just need to get somebody over. They just need to get someone close because they're not scoring any runs. And no one could do it. Innings would end. We remember this. I mean, every fan remembers that because those things over the course of a season stick in your head. But the Phillies are trying to figure out a way for it to do that a little bit less for us and for them.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I would love to start seeing them kind of, well, at least in Rojas's case, where they have an opportunity for a guy who is primed to be a better bunter. Has the right skill set to be a natural bunter. They did not, I believe, I just looked this up. They had like, I want to say 14 bunts for base hits last year. Most of them came from Johan Rojas and another guy we're going to talk about in a second. But our friend, I mean, bunting is not something the Phillies have made a big part of their game. We know that. The sport in general has moved away from it, and the Phillies have framed themselves as a power-dependent offense, not a slick and small one. Baseball has moved away from the sack bunt because the modern game is all about efficiency. There's no version of efficiency in which you are giving up free outs to the defense. And the sad collateral damage of that evolution is that the bunt for a base hit was sort of bumped out of the way as well, but not completely. Our friend Michael Bauman wrote on FanGraphs last year about the game's most prolific bunters. TJ Friedl of the Reds was a main character in this piece. He is a small left-handed hitter who does not make hard contact, and he's fast. He bunts because he thinks he can outrun the play. Then there's the more strategic bunters, for whom the bunt is about more where it goes than how fast you can run. Now, ideally, you're doing both, but bunting is hard enough when you're only trying to do it one way. Rojas, like Friedl, is a smaller guy for a ball player. He's under 6 feet tall. He's got speed. He doesn't hit the ball hard. Last year, only Garrett Stubbs and Rodolfo Castro hit hard balls less often for the Phillies than Johan Rojas. He's not left-handed, so he starts a step further from first base than a lefty. But if the bunt's good enough, you know, it won't matter. As I said, he's been working on it. Last year, Rojas laid down a squeeze bunt against the Angels with the bases loaded and successfully brought in a run. This spring training, he laid down a very pretty bunt down the third baseline in his first attempt of the spring. And if he wants to get really good at it, as I keep saying, there's a pretty good bunter in the Phillies clubhouse. Since I've now hinted at this person without saying it three times, do you want to guess who it is?
Is it Bryce Harper?
No.
No.
Nice guess, but no.
Thank you.
He did have one of the bunts for a base hit last year.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where when he wasn't hitting, he did try it more than once. And everyone's like, what is he doing? I'm just like, yeah. Dude just wants to get off the schneid. Like, he just wants to get something going. Stop freaking out if someone tries to bunt. Like, God, everyone freaks out because no one can decide. Bunting is fine. Everyone calm down. Sorry, I just remember it last year, like, on the broadcast. Like, what is he doing? Why would he try that? I'm just like, why do you think?
Well, it's like,
why does anyone try
because
that?
When Bryce Harper squares up the bunt, it's like when they drop the goat off in the T-Rex paddock in Jurassic Park. You know? The T-Rex doesn't want to be fed. He wants to hunt. People aren't here to watch Bryce Harper bunt. They're here to watch him hit a ball to Fishtown. Like, I do. I do get that. But at the same time, you got to trust Bryce Harper that he thinks, you know, I'm a skilled enough player. I'm a skilled enough hitter. And I'm a strategic enough player that I have identified a spot where bunting is in my best interest, and I'm going to give that a shot. So I think you got to just trust Bryce Harper at this point in his career to do the right thing in any situation. Like I said, he bunted for a base hit once last year. Bryson Stott actually did it three times. But no, the guy I'm talking about is Garrett Stubbs.
I knew you were going to say him. I thought, is it going to be Stubbs? How could it be Stubbs? Does he play enough to bunt? And then you started talking and we moved on. And now the end of that thought is he pinch hits most of the time. Of course he has enough chances to bunt.
There were five Phillies who bunted for a base hit last year. Brandon Marsh did it once. Bryce Harper did it once. Stott did it three times. Rojas did it three times. Garrett Stubbs did it seven times. He did it one less than the rest of them combined. And he, of course, had the highest success rate for bunting for a base hit because of that at 63.6. But you're right. His limited playing time contributes to that. He actually talked about this kind of recently. Not necessarily about bunting, but just the playing time thing. In another story with The Athletic, he talked about how, you know, I enjoy being the good times, good vibes guy, but like I do stuff too. Like I'm good at things.
I'm not
in baseball.
Just a mascot. I get paid. Like I can play baseball, and that is why I'm here.
And I do feel kind of bad for him for that, because you know, again, it's something he clearly enjoys, a role he clearly enjoys playing. And even if that was all he was, I would still want him on the Phillies because I don't know how to upgrade a backup catching position. I really don't.
Like every team needs this guy. Every team needs one of these guys. You know, it used to be, it's almost always the backup catcher, at least for the Phillies. Like, Cam, what's his face? Eric Kratz. Like, they're all definitely the fun, good time guys on the Phillies.
Right.
Every team needs one.
It does make it harder, though, for the player to come into a game and, like, hit the ball. He was saying in this story, you know, you don't play for a couple of days. You go out there and 91 looks like 95, 100 looks like a million. You know, it gets very hard to put the bat on the ball when you are asked to, when you don't play every day. And if JT Realmuto is starting in front of you, well, not playing every day is going to turn into not playing any day very, very quickly. But the story went into all the research on the opposition Stubbs does and how active he is in pitcher strategy meetings, even when he's not playing. He's shortening his swing this spring because of how sporadic his at-bats are, and he wants to be able to react faster to a pitch because, like I said, he's usually not seeing live big league pitching for many nights in a row. But back to the bunting. Stubbs is a great example of this, and Bauman wrote about him in his piece as well, because TJ Friedel, who I mentioned, is doing a version of a drag bunt where he's off to the races before he's even made contact. And if that ball lands in fair territory, well, Reds probably have a base runner. Garrett Stubbs is more strategic. He's not out of the box when he bunts, and he's typically able to put the ball where he wants, which is also a huge strength. Add to the fact that according to Fangraphs, he runs home to first faster than guys like Stephen Kwan and Cedric Mullins. Boy, the Phillies have some fast catchers right now. That's not a thing for a long time.
Or really most of the time.
Yeah.
Really, like, having even one catcher that's fast is something. And Real Muto loves to steal. He loves to try to steal bases. Whether it's wise for him to do so is not the point. He loves to do it. And the Phillies have managed, like, to put together a team of guys who all have, like, weird skills. Skills that don't necessarily completely profile to who they are. It's
or
great.
Necessarily align with each other 100% of the time. But
yeah, that's the problem.
But you're right. It is interesting. The Phillies have a pair of catchers right now who are just, you know, a couple of live guys with healthy enough legs to run stuff out. I mean, it is. It's kind of a blessing. But in any case, Stubbs is right there in the locker room serving as an example of one of the more successful bunters on the Phillies roster. And now we hope Rojas is going to be one of those players as well. I mean, he really is. Rojas, when it comes down to it, winds up being the kind of the central figure of Phillies spring training this year. I mean, you may not think that in the coverage, but he also is getting a fair amount of coverage because he's one of the few. Again, question marks feels a little too aggressive. It's not that you wonder exactly what he is or what the Phillies have in him. It's more like the Phillies think they have something in him, is my read. I think the Phillies have something in him. They didn't necessarily expect to have something in him. That's why they went out and traded for Christian Pache when they did. But then Rojas popped up. He started playing really good defense in center field. He looked lost at the plate and unable to hit major league pitching. He still was able to play a key role. He still went to the postseason with them. He still made a fantastic catch on a Ronald Acuna batted ball in the NLDS that saved a game. So, like, he found a way to contribute, even if it wasn't always with his bat. And in this case, this is something that could make him even more valuable. I mean, when you heard that Rojas has to work on his hitting, and he has been working on his hitting, and the Phillies want to, you know, include him in this, they want to see him succeed. But he's not being handed a job on day one. He's got to show he can hit in spring training. How much would becoming a like prolific bunter or even just at least a good bunter as Garrett Stubbs has been, how much would that go to his like next level of success, Liz? Like how much would you rather see him just be like, no, I want him to be a guy who can hit line drives, or if he adds a bunting dimension to his output, is that going to make him that much more valuable to the Phillies?
I think it would. Like a guy who can actually bunt and who's in the lineup most of the time. Like Stubbs can bunt, but he's not out there all the time. They need someone because the Phillies had a lot of trouble station to station last year. They're a team that relies a lot on home runs. And when the home runs stop coming for a while, all you have are guys that get stranded at, you know, second and third a lot. And getting one of those guys home would be great. One thing you did mention earlier that I'm hoping they'll use more is the ambush, because you mentioned one part of it is ambush, but that seems to not be a big thing in today's bunting. It's a lot of, oh, he's definitely going to bunt the guy over here. Everybody come in. You know, like bunting for base hits is rare because most guys know what's happening before it happens. So it would be nice if they could figure out how to disguise it a little bit more.
Well, again, according to How to Hit and Run the Bases, which is taught, I assume, every baseball player what they need to know. They talk about bunting to get on base and how it differs from a sacrifice bunt. It talks about how, you can't betray your intention as quickly. Mm-hmm. With a sack bunt, you know, you can square up as soon as the pitcher goes into his delivery. But you're trying to catch people off guard, like we're saying, when you're trying to bunt to get on base. In this particular case, Rojas does have a disadvantage. I mentioned him being right-handed. You know, and yeah, I can say, well, if it's a good enough bunt, it doesn't matter. But at the same time, it is going to be the difference. You know, that one step on a bunt specifically could be the difference. And they also talk about that in this book, that like a right-handed batter can't drag a bunt because he's got to meet the ball square on before he starts across the plate for first base. So it's not even like he has a skill set that it could really open up with bunting, but being right-handed kind of means he's not exactly right for the role. So it's something he's kind of got to some extent overcome as a guy the Phillies want to see bunting a little more. And again, we're talking about it so much, it sounds like they're going to be having him bunt every at bat, but that's obviously not going to be the case. I just think it would be valuable for the Phillies to have a guy in their batting order they can rely on to do this. And it does give them a little bit more versatility. Not everybody in the lineup has to be a home run hitter. I just wrote about the 6 spring trainings of Scott Kingery, and I'm bringing this up because it was really interesting to read about how Scott Kingery showed up for Phillies spring training over the 6 years of his deal, this being the last one, because once his 6-year extension ended and he reverted back to the minor league deal, the original minor league deal that he signed with the Phillies, which I forget and is just humorous. That's what he's on right now. But anyway, he showed up for camp, you know, as Scott Kingery, as like the player he was drafted, and you know, they gave him this deal and he looked really good and he was hitting line drives and he was hitting in the gaps and he was hitting for extra bases. And like, that's the kind of player he was. Then of course the Phillies and all that era's philosophies, they leaned in real hard and then got in his ear and said, like, you know, if you start getting under the ball, you're going to start hitting home runs. If you add some muscle, you're going to put some power behind that ball and you're going to start hitting home runs. He shows up 1 year, he's added like 15 pounds of muscle or something. And you know, yeah, the results in that vein are okay, that's cool. But trying to get under the ball just didn't work because not every player is built to do that. Not every player is built or has the natural swing or would have to make too many adjustments or is able to make those adjustments to become a different kind of hitter who's producing different kind of hits. So rather than take a guy who's built to be fast and built to get on base and being like, why don't you hit some home runs too? No, we're learning how to bunt instead. We're learning how to have a skill set that acquiesces to the natural skills that are already here. And I think, yeah, that is going to be of value to the Phillies, assuming he's able to bunt successfully as the regular season gets underway. But we'll see. We'll see. Just an interesting other dimension to the Phillies spring training story this year. Last thing we want to talk about before we wrap up this episode. Liz, are you excited for spring breakout?
Sure.
Major League Baseball wants you to be.
They definitely do.
Mm-hmm. Quick sidebar. The city of Miami, did you see this? They are so uninterested in having spring breakers come to Miami that they put a video together of, like, I believe it's actors, but, you know, people, quote unquote, from Miami, talking about how they're breaking up with spring break and they don't want spring breakers to come to Miami anymore. And there are going to be more intense laws and searches and crackdowns and all kinds of things that to make spring break a not fun experience in Miami. So if you're heading to Florida for spring break, you know, don't do that.
Don't go to Florida.
Yeah, head to Arkansas for spring break this year. They got lakes. It's a lake beach. It's the exact same experience. Trust me on this.
People say Alabama's nice.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a lie.
Give some other states a turn. But spring break out is how baseball is addressing that magical time of year. And they will get to be in Florida. And they are welcomed there. Actually, the crowd in Clearwater today was huge. They had somebody from, I think, the city in the broadcast booth with them for a little bit, and he was talking about, he's like, the line outside of Lenny's was like 100 people long just to get into the diner, you know, like it's blowing up down there. So they are more than happy to have people from Major League Baseball in Florida. Spring Breakout, if you haven't heard, is a 4-day event Major League Baseball invented for this season, for the first time, from March 14th to 17th. It will be a showcase of baseball's future stars, Liz, and that means the Phillies' top prospects will be there. In their first game, they will play a team of Tigers' top prospects on March 16th in Lakeland. The Phillies' roster will include 20 of their top 30 prospects, according to Todd Zielecki, including Mick Abel, Aiden Miller, Justin Crawford, Starlin Cabba, Devin Saltabon, Brian Rincon, Eduardo Tate, and Gabriel Rincones. Liz, is this exciting or what? One of those guys is 17 years old. How we feel?
Oh, my God. You know, there was some stuff going around recently about how the Phillies reportedly signed or a handshake deal with Ronald Acuna's 12-year-old brother. We didn't talk about it in the podcast. But, like, hearing that a 17-year-old, like, this is great. The MLB has been trying to find a way to showcase their, you know, the young talent. I don't know if this is going to accomplish the goal, but I mean, I guess it's better than nothing. But I also look at, like, 17-year-olds and, like, are they ready for this?
Well, it's not like it's the biggest spotlight. The games don't count. Like, it might be, I don't know. Since we've never done this before, I don't know. Like, is the turnout going to be big? There's going to be people who want to see prospects. There's going to be people who just want to see Phillies players or members of the Phillies organization. People who are already down there for spring training. I don't know. I'd be curious to see what the numbers were for people who went down with this specifically in mind as an event they definitely wanted to be sure they attended.
Yeah.
Because again, popularity wise, we don't really know how big of an event this is because it's never happened before.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it looks, what it looks like, how the players sound, the types of things that will go wrong and that will probably not be repeated the next time they do this, because there will be things. There's always things. So I guess I am kind of eager to see how this turns out. Good luck to the Phillies prospects.
And it's a good opportunity to use as an excuse to get, if you're interested, more educated on Phillies prospects, which I know some people pay zero attention to the minors. Some people pay all of their attention to the minors. Some people are in between. Some people just know that the Phillies have Andrew Painter and Mick Abel. And outside of that, not really sure who else is around. This is a great opportunity to learn more about the prospects. I'm sure they're going to give you basic rundowns. I'm assuming at least some of them will be televised and if you're able to catch that, but I mean, yeah. We'll see how successful this is. It's a cool idea. And if your goal is to get more people excited about the younger players coming up the pipeline, this is something that can do that. So, yeah, it'll be something. I know I'll be watching however yeah. I can. Just because we hear these names more than we see them, I think.
For sure.
For most fans. Yeah. So it definitely gives you a more personal, direct look at what some of these players can do. And the Phillies do have some exciting players, more than just the ones that get talked about.
Yes, I hope there is a parent or guardian along with the 17-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Eduardo Tate.
Kiddo.
He is a
kiddo
catcher from Panama.
I hope he yeah. I hope they're putting him up with like a family.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. As always, stick around billypenn.com/hittin'season for new episodes as the Grapefruit League play continues and we roll right into the regular season. And if that's not enough coverage for you, you can head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season for $5 a month. You can get access to a Phillies happy hour we call Absolutely Hammered, where we talk about the Phillies in a much more, let's say, informal capacity. And air our any issues we have in and around or with the team. And we also do The Dirty Inning over there, which is a podcast about the dumbest, funniest, and most obscure innings in Philadelphia Phillies history. We have a lot of fun putting those episodes together. We are always talking about things you did not know about the Philadelphia Phillies and things you did not know happened to, about, or with the Philadelphia Phillies all throughout history. From WHYY and Billy Penn, I'm Justin Clue.
I'm Liz Rocher.
And this has been Hittin' Season.